Hey, it's 48 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along, making it there. All of you listening today, we are live from the Plush Fleet. Is it hot in here?
No, it's cold. I am.
It was just freezing yesterday. It's a little warmer.
All right. We got some weird kind of Lady Hawk thing going on here with the temperature, because every time I'm cold, you're hot, and every time I'm hot, you're frigid.
It's 70 degrees. It's not bad.
All right. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. It is Friday, and welcome to day 12. This is the Rick Emerson Studio. Rick Emerson Show. Hello. I'm wide awake. I actually am, but the problem is that everything is... I've been running behind about 45 minutes all day long, and so I just had my caffeine about 10 minutes ago, which means that it's in my... wherever it goes. My hypothyroid thalamus thing, or whatever it is. It's not actually my brain yet, though. So if I just sound, if I sound like Clyde, recently come from the hookah, and that is hookah, not hooker.
Oh.
Can you get me a hookah for tonight? And some drugs. Oh, it's going to be the best show ever. I can already feel it. All right, I'll be awake in like 2 minutes. In any event, we are here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, recently named one of the 10 greatest beer cities in the world. Talk about that. One of only two United States cities to achieve that distinction, by the way. Everybody else can eat it. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. You can also email if you'd like to engage with us electronically. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Which really does beg the question, how would you request, if you live back east and you really did want to find a hookah, how would you do that? It doesn't seem like anybody would be able to understand you. Those are the things that I think about. And apparently nobody else. All right. We'll talk to mailman Chris in a second. We'll come in. By the way, I just got to say, Tim Riley just showed me something very exciting in the back. It was the new trailer for Spider-Man 3.
It's on my website.
Which is genius, by the way. You go to timrileymedia.com. You can see that the trailer for Spider-Man 3 featuring Venom. Which looks fantastic. I'm not a fan of the first one, but I was a huge fan of the second one.
Me too.
Me too.
I'd say that second Spider-Man...
I don't even think I saw the first one. I just watched the second one over and over again.
The first one is ass.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says.
They probably got their bearings about the second one.
That's the thing. Yeah, it was by Sam Raimi, and you got to figure that Sam Raimi was just... I'm thinking he was just intimidated by working within the studio system, or he just didn't... He wasn't sure of himself, didn't know his bearings, felt like he had to make the movie the studio wanted him to make and not the movie he wanted to make, and so the first Spider-Man was... Man, it's like I walked in wanting to like it, because I would say that Spider-Man is second only to Batman in terms of the greatness of superheroes. And Superman, for my money, is at least in 2006. He's a very distant third.
Three thumbs down.
It's for Superman? They're already making a sequel to that crap.
Why?
Superman Returns, or whatever the hell they're going to call it. They've already recruited Bryan Singer, who really ought to know better. Yes, I am talking to you, Bryan Singer. For the love of sweet God. I mean, the man made, he's made some of the fine movies of our life. He's made The Usual Suspects, for God's sake. And then he just makes that... I don't want to talk about it. Anyway, but I was two things yesterday, 2 days ago, I was reading a thing that they're going to make the Superman, whatever the follow-up to Superman Returns, which I will not see it. I'm telling you right now, I won't see it. You can't make me see it. I won't give you my money. I will never, never again. Never again. So... The point is, though, you go to timrileymedia.com, you can see the trailer for Spider-Man 3, which is out, which is really amazing looking. Some bad-looking CGI, but that's always the case with the trailers, because it's not done. It's just a thing they just rush out to kind of get people pumped for it. To say when it comes out, is it next summer?
Next summer.
All right.
Yeah.
So there you go. So I'm sure Mike Chase is on the Twitter about that this morning. So there you go. Spider-Man 3 trailer out. Speaking of out, there was some other media that was posted that you can no longer view.
Yeah, which is also on my website.
You can go there, you can click on it. You can't see it. You can't watch it. This video has been removed.
Guess which one it is.
So we'll talk about that. We'll reveal all of that here in a second. Is there anything else I need to get done before we talk to Mail Micro? Probably not. No, probably there is, but I don't know what it would be. So we might as well just... It's a busy show today, so we might as well plunge on ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show.
The postman is the person in your neighborhood.
good friend, the official stenographer of the Rick Emerson radio. Let me ask you this. Do your bosses ever hear the fact that you were prefaced on this radio program by a postman jingle followed by machine gun fire and the sounds of dead bodies hitting the ground and ask you about that?
No.
Okay. They're afraid to lean on you too heavily for fear that you'll kill them?
We're just going to hope that they don't hear me, because remember the last time they heard that I was on the radio, they told me I probably shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. It's good to see that lesson stuck. All right. Is it just that as a government employee, you don't fear for your job at all? Doesn't matter. You can't. Let me ask you this, really, just honestly, me to you, man to man, point blank here. What would it take for you to get fired?
Well, I'm a union employee, and I'm a government employee, so.
So you got hundreds of layers of protection there.
As long as I don't hurt anybody, steal mail, you know, even technically, I think even drugs wouldn't even get me fired. I mean, if I was selling drugs or something,
yes,
maybe.
Yes.
But, I mean, if I was doing drugs, they'd probably just put me into rehab.
Fantastic. All right, well, there you go. Well, rehab's where everybody's going these days. So, I think that's what I'll do. The next day, will we ever take a vacation on the show? That's what I don't think I'll take a vacation. I think I'll just go to rehab somewhere. It seems like it's more relaxing. You know what I mean? You go there, nobody can bother you. Hey, you don't take your BlackBerry or whatever with you. You just go in and they shut the door and you just hang out for 2 weeks and do a whole lot of nothing, which sounds fantastic to me. So there you go. Let me ask you this also, and because somebody had emailed me about this and I didn't know the answer to it. Would it be possible for us, and by us I mean we, the assembled cast of the Rick Emerson Show, to take a tour of the dead letter office? Because that sounds like a fascinating place to me. I picture a room not unlike that room below LAX. Where I went when I lost the stuff that I bought for everybody. I bought a bunch of presents for people when I was in L.A. Lost at the airport, blah, blah, blah. They take me to the lost and found. To me, when I picture the dead letter office, it's a cross between a regular mail room and that Ark of the Covenant room at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, with just mounds and mounds and hundreds of thousands of letters stretching off into the horizon in every direction. Is it anything at all like that, and could we see it?
I can't answer, sorry. That would be like a clerk function.
Now, when you say you can't answer, is that you don't know or you can't answer?
I don't know. I don't even know that the room actually exists or where. You know, it's a clerk function. There's, you know, I'm a carrier. I deliver mail. Clerks and mail handlers handle the mail.
All right. Well, if you've
ever read the book by Clive Barker called The Great and Secret Show, there's a whole big section in there that takes place in some dead letter office. It's like a central location. That's the way I always
think. The dead letter office is one of those things that you hear referred to so often you don't know if it really exists. You know what the dead letter office is like? The dead letter office is like when you hear a band being interviewed on television and they're putting out a box set or some sort of retrospective, and they use this phrase. They say, well, we went into the vaults and we found some songs that we recorded back for the fourth album in 78 and never came out. And you always are like, where the vault is? What is the vault? Where is it? Is it by the Fortress of Solitude? Is there more than one vault? Is it possible to go find the vault and walk around inside of it?
Maybe they're all in Pueblo, Colorado.
Thank you. See, there you go. And that's a callback from weeks ago. Fantastic.
Weeks ago.
All right. All right.
I got several emails yesterday. I just have to say it. Best phrase of the day from yesterday was, a breast is nature's Capri Sun.
No, it is true. I can't take any credit for that. That is a listener who came up with that. I got a whole lot about the yacht. I don't want to be weaned. Which really only works if you say it like what Monty Python referred to as a pepper pot, which is a sort of cockney, you know, that kind of the meaning of life, kind of woman.
Like Sam.
like that woman at the end of meaning of life. At least I don't work for Jews. That woman at the end, when she's feeding Mr. Creosote. That's exactly what I was doing when I was talking in that little girl voice yesterday. All right, let's see, what do we got today? Well, the long arm of Karl Rove reaches deep into YouTube and snatches away something that we were just beginning to enjoy and exploit. Let's see. We have today's installment of The Worst Story Ever. As part of today's installment of News That Hurts, which is News That Hurts is sort of a way to deal with our, we too have a dead letter office here. And the dead letter office is just sort of the big pile of news. And I'm not even talking about things that I tease and don't get to. I'm just talking about the fact that just the news desk alone, and Tim can attest to this, our holiday shows, they are formed almost entirely out of just the bits of detritus and flotsam and news crap that we pile up that we don't even, it's not that we don't even get to, we don't even get to tease it. It's so deep in the news pile. The news pile is like 8 inches high already, and we're only in November. So, Anyway, so I've started to funnel off some of the more horrifying and revolting news stories, and we'll make that into our news that hurts today. We will also have the sounds of Whoopi in the morning, courtesy of our friend Alo, who sent us some sound for the Whoopi Goldberg show, which is not so much terrible as it is just jaw-droppingly, unbelievably, mind-numbingly dull. We have that. Scott Daly will be here to really go on and on more than one would think is, strictly speaking, necessary about the Speed Racer film. And we will play the creepiest song ever. I think it's been long enough. The jumping guy was on Tuesday. So today, Life is for the Living, and we will play the creepiest song ever. It's no longer too soon. Alwyn, at every opportunity, we'll continue to badger Scotty about the which man he would make out with if he had to. And I'm going to do that every single day until he cracks. All right, so there you go.
Carl Rove snatching something off of YouTube. News that hurts, worst story ever, Whoopi in the morning, Scott Daly, the creepiest song ever, and Scotty making out with a man.
Yes. Well, I can't guarantee that will actually happen. We will be badgering him about that, though. That's what we're going to do today.
Excellent. And, from me and from anyone else, you know, to veterans out there, tomorrow's Veterans Day.
So, I thought today was Veterans Day.
Today, it's an Veterans Day is the 11th.
Are you at work today?
I am. The post office is closed tomorrow. There will be no mail delivery tomorrow.
Oh, great. Thanks.
But the 11th...
Saturday? So the post office is going to be closed on a Saturday?
Yeah.
Because why not
Monday?
It's
11th. It was originally Armistice Day. It was signed on 11-11 at 11 a.m. at the end of World War One.
Is Veterans Day the same thing as Memorial Day?
No, that's a different one.
All right. So one is for soldiers who were killed, and one is simply for soldiers.
All people who are dead.
All right. All people who are dead everywhere.
Yeah.
John Wilkes Booth. All right.
We're closed tomorrow. Some places, like schools, some banks, are closed today in observance of Veterans Day.
You know, can I anything that is a holiday that remotely connected to our independence and the idealistic nature of our government is a holiday on which the government ought to be goddamned open. Let me just say that right here. If it's a holiday that's about people who are over there, you know, people who are anywhere in the world defending our right to freely engage and associate with one another, freedom of the press, freedom of the post, and so forth, on those days, the government ought to be open. It makes no sense to me that we celebrate our forward progress as a nation by making it impossible for me to go to the bank. The whole thing just infuriates me.
Well, it's like Labor Day. We celebrate Labor Day by giving everyone the day off and no one has to labor.
Bunch of liberal hooey is what that is.
Right. You should be quiet, though, because a lot of your listeners are federal employees that have that day off, and I don't think you want them mad.
That's what, like I have the power to change it. I'm just saying. That's just my observation.
Never underestimate the power of the Rick Emerson Show.
Yes, okay. Thank you, sir. All right. Where am I at? Push away. 37?
38.
38. All right.
38.
All right. We will find out where we stand at the end of today's program, sir.
Talk to you then.
Thank you. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Mailman Chris. We're also going to talk to Lisa Goddard today. And here's I may call for Lisa Goddard and they may just hand the phone to some guy standing by the broom closet.
No, I asked if Lisa today.
Yeah, I'm not going to believe it until I hear her dulcet tones once again ringing
Candy
out.
Candy Crowley's going to be on Bill Maher tonight.
I love Candy Crowley, I really do. If only because she looks like she could throw a pretty good punch, too. Candy Crowley, who joined us a couple weeks ago, she's a senior political correspondent there at CNN. She's going to be on Real Time with Bill Maher, which is a show that I will watch tonight, although I typically do not watch it. In fact, it's funny because we were just... It's not ironic, which is what people would call it, but it is interesting. That I'm going to have to watch Real Time tonight with Bill Maher, which is his sort of HBO version of Politically Incorrect, which is another program that I watched for a while, and then I had to force myself to just... I didn't have to force myself. I basically just had to take it off the TiVo. I had to remove it. I had to remove my season pass because the show just makes me angry. It just makes me angry, and there's just no point to it. I don't know if I'm speaking just for me or if I'm speaking for the three of us or if I'm speaking for everybody out there, but I become really burned out on panel shows. You know what I mean? And if it's a panel show that's like McLaughlin Group, is that still on? It's got to be. That show will never go away.
No, I think that's gone.
Really? The answer is 5. It's gone? Well, the McLaughlin Group was actually sort of an interesting sort of civilly conducted. And it's not that I'm opposed to arguing or debating or whatever, but man, it's like if I had to see one more show, oh, goddamn, Michelle Malkin. I was flipping I was looking for something the other day, election results or whatever on Tuesday, and I flipped over into some hideous channel, and there's Michelle Malkin, who, I swear to God, I know that it's wrong to beat people. I know that it's wrong to settle arguments by punching people repeatedly in the face until their visage resembles so much fruit-filled oatmeal.
Life is not Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, man, I... God forbid I'm ever walking down the street and I see Michelle Malkin being torn limb from limb by wild jackals while being set on fire by a bunch of hooligans. I'll tell you what, if I had the... What? Who is that?
That's why I asked.
Let me, okay.
Somebody has been added to the bill of a show that we're promoting.
Okay, we'll get to that. Well, hey, and our logo's even on this.
Yeah,
okay,
I was surprised you can even read it.
All right, we'll get to this. Oh, man, somebody's had some work done. And by work, I mean Photoshop. We'll get to this in a minute. But I'm just going to say, just real quickly about this Bill Maher thing. Michelle Malkin, I mean, I wish her a long life and the best of health. I'm just saying, God forbid. That she steps in front of the wrong car someday, and there's some guy's been doing a little drinking, and you're having to hose little bits of Michelle out of your grill the next day. That'd be too bad.
What's Ann Coulter going to do now?
Where is Ann Coulter? That's my question.
Dick Cheney and Mary Cheney. And
when is the last time anybody? Do you think the Republicans yanked her out of the spotlight?
I saw her last week, and she was really toned down.
Well, yeah, because they got it. I mean, that's because as much as Michael Moore may have damaged the liberal cause, and I don't know that he did or not, but I mean, she has done three times the damage to the Republicans. You don't get anywhere with Americans by talking about 9/11 widows as being harpies. That's not. And referring to them like stripping for Playboy. You don't, that's not how one wins elections in this country. She was misinformed.
She definitely needs some kind of makeover.
Oh, man. She needs to have about 5 inches of that neck removed. And I don't mean that in a Marie Antoinette kind of way. I mean, really, honestly, your neck is just too long. Have it taken down a bit. I don't know if that's a surgery you can have done or not, but they're doing miraculous things in the operating rooms of this nation now, Ann Coulter.
Maybe she wore a boa.
Doesn't it look like she's got enough neck for like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys?
Yes.
She is sort of like, it's like you see those football players who just have no neck at all, and it's like she got it all. It just sort of, as a wash, ended up on her. But they just yanked her right out of the spotlight. But I can no longer watch panel shows because I just find myself wanting to get a handgun and just settle things once and for all. But I will have to watch Real Time with Bill Maher tonight because this was, what, Tuesday night that he was on? So I'll give you the heads up just so you understand what we talk about when we talk to Lisa Goddard here in about 10, 12 minutes. Bill Maher, formerly of Politically Incorrect, now of Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO, which is a good show. Not a show that I can bring myself to watch, but very well done if you're into that sort of a thing.
And you have to give him credit for being able to go an hour without an interruption.
Yeah.
No other show can do that.
No, he does it. That is true. I never really thought about that, and it's live.
Right. There's no stopping. He just keeps going.
That's a good point. I never really considered
that. That's why I like that show. Because there's no interruption, they just keep moving with it.
I never really considered that.
It's like an evening at a good improv.
Yeah, he is a funny guy. I don't really care for his stand-up. I think he's funny when he's just being off the cuff. I wish he would get rid of
Vegas.
Well, the thing about Bill Maher is you can tell that he comes from a comedy background, and here's how you can tell with Bill Maher. That you know that he used to be a comic because everything he does now is like in his contract, that he has to have some moment where he's standing in front of the crowd just doing one-liners, which is really just not his strong suit. I mean, he's so much funnier when he's just behind the desk just riffing. But when he gets up and he does his, you know, and he does his set him up, knock him down, set him up, you know, the Carson-type monologue. I mean, I believe the Johnny Carson-type opening monologue is a thing of the past. It's like sketch comedy to me. It's a thing that is... And that's what I meant to ask the thing. We had some guy on the other day talking about sketch comedy. Well, whatever. Anyway, but sketch comedies and monologues are a thing of the past. You got to watch Bill Maher tonight, though. A, because as Tim pointed out, it is really amazing. He does a full hour, and he's on camera the entire hour. There's no cutting away to anything. There's no whatever.
That's what makes it so different.
No, it is. It is very well done. But because he will be talking about our, I guess, former now RNC chairman, Ken Mellman. He was the Republican National Committee chairman, stepped down last night. Now, here's the weird thing about this, and I am not, we are not the first to talk about it. We are not even the tenth to talk about this. Bill Maher was on Larry King Live on Tuesday, and Larry King Live was talking about the hypocrisy within the Republican Party. And you know that here on the Rick Emerson program, we have no problem with what consenting adults do. I have no problem with that. Anybody of age does. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I don't give a rip. But if you're some moralizing, religious, hypocritical nutcase out there trying to pass laws to restrict the freedom of others...
Which there's no shortage of.
Which there is no shortage of, and yet...
Most have been exposed, but there's still a few left that have to be brought out.
In your free time, you're wearing a leather cap, you know, and walking around the back alley somewhere, looking to be flogged, then there's things that have got to be dealt with. And so... Bill Maher gets on Larry King Live on Tuesday night, and Larry King is talking about hypocrisy within the anti-gay factions in the Republican Party. Like, they're talking about those log cabin Republican guys. I don't get what their deal is, but...
There are only like a half dozen of them.
But Bill Maher says, and this is true, this is an absolute fact. I saw it with my own eyes. Tim saw it.
Yep.
The video clip was hosted on TimRileyMedia.com.
But if you go there now...
It's been removed by YouTube.
No longer available.
Bill Maher went on Larry King Live and said, well, you know, it's no secret that Ken Melman, head of the RNC, is of that persuasion.
And Larry King egged him on to name names.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that Maher didn't want to say. You can tell that Maher was reluctant.
He wanted to save it for Friday.
People
paid to see this show.
Larry King, come on, name a gay Republic. Do it. Tell me who's gay in the Republican Party.
On basic cable.
And finally, Bill Maher said, well, it's no secret about Ken Melman. Bam! Last night, Ken Melman resigned, gone, finished. And you know the weird thing is, they never mentioned it. They didn't mention why. They gave no reason at all. At no point did they reference the fact that Bill Maher went on national television and said he's a bigoted Republican and gay.
And the reason that they do it on Friday is so it loses momentum by the time we get back to Monday and nobody remembers it anymore.
Yeah, they place it there in the news cycle. Okay, so now...
So all the panel show guests have already been chosen, and nobody's chosen any to talk about this.
And you go to Tim's website or anyone, and YouTube anywhere, and you look for this Bill Maher clip.
No longer available.
It'll still come up, but you go to play it, and it's been removed. And it was removed, you say, for the West Coast feed of Larry King.
Right.
So Bill Maher made this comment on the East Coast feed of Larry King. By the time it gets over here a few hours later, gone. Gone, cut out, removed. And so Lisa Goddard is covering the resignation of RNC head Ken Melman, and I'm going to ask her about it, and we'll see what she says. And it's nowhere in the CNN prep sheet, it's nowhere in any of the news stories, but you know what? It was on not only television, it was on CNN. I mean, Bill Maher said it on her network, so I don't mean to be like I'm putting her on the spot, but I am going to bring it up. Sarah Dillon joins us today, looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Glad to be here, full of life, energy, vim, vigor, and vitality. How are you?
I'm good.
That was the biggest build-up to a two-word
response. Well, because I can never tell if you're trying to be a jerk or if you actually think that I look like I'm full of vim and vigor.
I think you do.
I got like 9 hours of sleep last night. I'm kind of loopy.
I'm never trying to be a jerk with that.
Well, sometimes you say that when you know I'm like a little tired or under the weather.
Well, I suppose. But I think you can always tell from my tone of voice. When I say like, someone looks a little glad to be here.
I was just kind of glazed over after all the political talk.
It's not political talk. It's scandal talk, baby.
Okay.
We're done with it.
You love scandal talk.
I love scandal, but you're more into politics than I am. I like scandal like Lindsay Lohan calling Paris Hilton next Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
That was caught on tape.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, that should be talked about at length.
Oh, and it will be. Here's the thing. You know what this is, though? This is not so much politics as it is just a bigoted, hypocritical a-holes.
But he's not going to get what's coming to him.
Oh.
Well, he will in the Portland market. At least people will know here.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for you today.
So apparently, with this meltdown of the chairman of the Republican National Committee, the GOP becomes more of the gay old party.
This is GOP. That's genius. Someone needs to Photoshop that right now. GOP, gay old, and then the elephant would have like a jaunty hat.
Mm-hmm.
Like tilted at a rakish angle. Or something. What would you give the elephant? Like a feather boa.
This.
The Elton John sunglasses.
Sparkly. Sparkly sunglasses. But
lots of facial hair like the village people.
The gay old party.
That's fantastic. Put the elephant in chaps.
Assless chaps. Oh, good times. I love this country. I really do.
Meanwhile, Al-Qaeda taunts the president with a video claiming they're winning. An Oregon town elects an 18-year-old mayor. And yes, the trailer for Spider-Man 3 has made its debut.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really good. I'm looking here at page, whatever the hell this is, page 4 in the...
So something new has been added.
The A&E?
Yes, it is.
It's good to see that Life in Hell is still around. I didn't notice that.
Nobody notices it anymore.
Life in Hell, yeah, but you know, Life in Hell, what a great comic strip that is. God bless it. So I'm looking at page A4. Susan Reynolds, you'll be interested to know this, right here. Tim Conway, Harvey Korman, farewell performance next week, Friday, November 17th, Schnitzer Hall, right there. Right sandwich between the House of Blues logos and the Ticketmaster, AM 970, Solid State Radio. Our logo right there.
Excellent.
But now listen to this. Tim Conway and Harvey Korman, next week, special guest star, Louise Duarte. That sounds like a fake name.
Do they know they have to share the dressing room?
Imagine sharing a dressing room with Tim Conway. And by the way, is Tim Conway, is that makeup or is that Botox or Photoshop or all of the above?
I don't think he needs Botox. He doesn't go out that much in public.
I'm not saying, and look, and I'm not saying that this is the case, but if in this photograph, Tim Conway looks high on drugs.
We'll have to ask him when he gets on stage.
Does Tim Conway, Sarah, let me ask you this. Look at this picture of Tim Conway. He's on the right. Does he look like he's on a little bit of a stimulant there? I'm not saying he is. I'm sure it's just a photo.
That looks Photoshopped.
Yeah, he looks a little high, though. He's got big, high, crazy eyes.
But he's jovial.
I don't know what he looks like to begin with. I don't know if that's like...
He's about 3 feet high, and he's always leaning over.
That looks like a 3 feet high crazy man.
3 foot high crazy man. How high is the crazy man, mama? All right.
I thought that they were going to be super old. They both look fairly young.
Well, really? Now they're in their 70s.
Yeah.
I mean,
people live to be 100. Look at Bob Hope.
They're not super old, I guess. Who is this, Scotty? Line one? All right, it doesn't say. I'm going to take line one. Hello, Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you?
Hey, Rick, what's going on? It's Sam Kinison.
from beyond the grave.
It's Sam Kinison from beyond the grave, and I know because I was listening to the show, and I heard you guys talking, and I heard you asking where Ann Coulter's been. And I've seen her recently because she's been in hell. She's been in hell with me. Do you understand that, Rick? Oh, oh. Rick, I think it's maybe this voice might bring back some old memories of when you used to chase me in your car and you used to scare me because you used to actually stalk me back in the day. But I just want to say you're doing a great job. We actually listen to your show here in hell.
This is the most bizarre phone call I've ever received in my life.
Well, it's true! Don't run away from it, Rick. Don't run away from it. It's your buddy Sam. It's your buddy Sam Kinison. And, listen, I think that you might need to know that I left your name at the door and hell. I put your name Rick Emerson plus one, so when your time comes, you can bring a guest.
Thank you. That doesn't go unappreciated, Sam.
And you have a lot of fans down here now.
Yes. Well, I like to think that we'll have the best guest there, as Tom Likas always says.
Yeah. As soon as you're ready to come down here, Ed Bradley wants to do a story on you.
Yeah. All right. Sarah, can you drop the mono bed there for a second? We might as well just roll with this. Now, would I be correct in saying that probably standing there in the same room as you, someone in your immediate vicinity, is renowned comedian and impressionist Craig Gass?
Yes, he's. How'd you know that?
It's just call it a sixth sense, Sam.
Yes, it is. It is. In fact, there's actually a couple other comedians here that want to say hi. I hope you don't mind if I put them on.
No, that's fine.
Let me put on Adam Sandler here. Hold on
all
a
right.
second.
Great.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Sarah, would you like to say hello to Adam Sandler?
Hi, Adam. I didn't know you were dead.
No, I'm not dead. I'm just Jewish. I was just in town getting some bagels, and I thought that maybe we could meet up for lunch today, but I guess you guys are going to be on the air.
Well, we are here. I could roll in some locks, though, if you'd like.
All right. You know, next time I come back into town, I'd like to come in and do your show in person.
Well, of course. You know, we're always willing to have, multi-tiered, multi-faceted, multi-personality
talented
studio.
Yes, we're a big
studio.
Fan of yours, Adam.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And by we, I mean Sarah.
You know what? I like Sarah, too. She sounds very nice and very sexy.
I think I was one of the only people to see Spanglish. Two thumbs up.
Thank you. You were actually one of three.
Okay.
And two of them were Spanish and didn't count.
Is there anybody else in the room there?
Yeah, you want to talk to Tracy Morgan?
I heard that Tracy Morgan was there.
All right, hold on. He's a black dude. Hold on. Hey!
Tracy.
Hey, it's Tracy Morgan. I'm on 30 Rock on Wednesday nights with Alec Baldwin and Tina Fey. That's crazy.
Sarah, how are you feeling? You feel like having a flashback?
Somebody snorting there. You sound like one of my ex-girlfriends.
It's sort of like I've had like a breakdown. This is like when Jonathan Winters had a breakdown and all of his characters came out of his head in the mental hospital. That's what I'm feeling like.
Now, dude was crazy. I'm not crazy.
Yes. Hey, can I talk to what? Is Craig in the room? Can I talk to Craig again?
No, hold on. Al Pacino wants to say hi.
Oh, all right.
Never ends.
Hi. Who's the girl in the background?
Sarah?
Hi, I'm Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Al.
I'm looking at some pictures that I Googled of you.
Yeah?
I'd like to take some time, if you have it this weekend, to Google you in person. Hoo-ah!
Oh, boy. We can talk off air about that.
Sarah, you know that you love this voice. This is, even though it's intimidating, you like it because there's an air of danger to this voice. That at any second, I'm still sexy when I'm yelling at your face! Hoorah!
I'm sorry, the snorting is back again.
You can't control it.
You snort like a pig. That's crazy.
I can't control it. It's overcoming.
That's crazy. I like it when white people laugh.
Is there anybody else in this peculiar Pandora's box of voices that we need to speak to before we talk to Craig?
I'm glad you asked, because we got Christopher Walken here.
Okay, never ends. All right.
Hi, listen, I don't know where to go with this voice, except to tell you that I'm going to hit someone in the face with a cowbell.
Okay.
Wow. This is Christopher Walken. You know, when I bite into a York of peppermint patty, I get a sensation. It's like little deaf kids touching me. I don't even know what that means. I'm sorry.
What? Okay. Hello.
Hey, it's Craig Gass calling.
Craig Gass, how are you,
that
man?
That's impressive.
I'm doing. My impressions are impressive.
All right, here's it. I got to give a little background here. Here's the thing. I had talked to our good friend Matt, who Matt used to work on this program before, and Matt and actually Mike Chase had called me too, and he was calling me and say, hey, Craig Gass is in town. And, would you want to have him on? And because he does impressions, he does whatever. And I had heard, I'm trying to remember where I heard you before. And I know you've been on Howard a whole bunch, and you were kind of the official Sam impersonator for Howard, right?
Yeah, that's right, in the beginning, yeah, like back in the day. And then I started to expand on that. But
And so we just had such a packed show, and frankly, I'm a terrible interviewer. And I'm even worse with comics because, and this is no disrespect to you. This is not their stuff. But most comics are just, they're terrible interviews.
I agree. I've been working in radio as long as I've been doing comedy for 13 years, and I've seen some of my favorite comedians just bomb on a radio show.
Because they're either not funny or they're just like a-holes, and then the interview just goes south, and then you're stuck in a room with some nitwit for 20 minutes.
Well, that, or there's actually a third part of it. Sometimes they just try to do their act on the air, and it's kind of forced, and it's very awkward.
Well, that's it. Yeah, and here's the worst thing, is when you're talking to a comedian, and you're like, and I know that Howard always ran into this trouble. You talk to a comedian, and, you obviously think it'd be funny, and they have jokes and whatever, and they're entertainers. But then you'll ask them a real question, and it's just impossible to ever get past the shtick. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like talking to a cardboard cutout of them.
Yeah, and that's why I never really related to any comedians. I always felt like I didn't belong in comedy because I don't really understand comedians and how antisocial they are, or how they are always on. You never feel like you're really talking to a real human being. But, I got into comedy because I hated comedians. That was my original intent, was just to try to get as many comedians to hate me as possible. And in 1993, my only goal was to try to irritate as many comedians as possible. And it worked. Within 6 months, I got banned from every major comedy club in the Pacific Northwest, except for two.
Fantastic.
And all the comedians hated me. And then George Carlin became interested, and then Howard became interested, and it slowly built up from there. And now I'm actually on a bunch of TV shows. So I got a new gig at I just got introduced as the new guy on King of Queens.
My producer Sarah knows you from Sex and the City.
I do.
Right?
Yes, I dated Miranda
Now we have to be.
You were the overeater.
Yeah, we have to be clean about this.
I can say this in a clean way that I am the. I'm known as the glazed donut guy. We actually.
You split a Krispy Kreme.
We split a Krispy Kreme. We decided to fall off our program together. We met at Weight Watchers, so I put on a lot of weight. I know this show way too much.
Yeah, you were big boned.
Yes, I put on. I actually put on 35 pounds to do the show. So I'm a lot heavier on the show. And we meet at a Weight Watchers meeting, and I'm known as the glazed donut guy. There's this whole thing that happens that we can't talk about on the air. But anyone who watches Sex and the City knows what I'm talking about. And I always get these really weird roles like that. On Las Vegas, I have a recurring character. Where I'm a comedian who performs at James Caan's casino. I'm known as the Portland Dangler, where I do this really X-rated show where I like to stir people's drinks.
Take care of that. Hey, I want to kind of finish what I was saying before, which is, so I had talked to Mike and Matt this morning, some guys I used to work with, and they're like, hey, you know, he's in town. Would you want to talk to him? And I just sort of, my default setting is I was like, oh, God, I just, probably not. I'll probably just take a pass. But I got to say, haven't talked to you now, and people, Sarah saw my face when you called in as Sam, that I did not know that was coming. I got sort of blindsided. But I gotta say, no. I mean, obviously everybody knows. You know, you do great voices, great impression, and it's not just the same voices that everybody does. It's not just like another guy doing William Shatner.
Right. Well, I always was embarrassed to try to do any other kind of voices other people do. I'm actually embarrassed to do Christopher Walken because so many people do it. But I like to do voices that nobody else can do. And sometimes I'll just I'll pick up voices and I won't realize I can do them. I'll be telling a story, and I'll say, "Hey, did you see Tom Arnold on the Tonight Show? He seemed to be out of his mind. He was on there, and he just goes, yeah, I'll tell you what, man. You know, I really love fat women and cocaine." And then I don't even realize until I'm doing the voice that the voice is right there. And I love being able to do voices that nobody else does.
So you just kind of fell into it without even realizing it.
Well, there's a whole story behind it. I mean, I don't know if you know the whole story. This is not a joke. My entire family, this is a true story, my entire family is deaf. Everyone in my family, my mom, my dad, and my sister are all completely deaf. And the way it happened is my mom was born completely deaf from a birth defect. My dad was born with all of his hearing, but he lost over 75% of his hearing when he was a kid. He got in an accident that popped out his eardrums. So he had to go to deaf schools for the rest of his life, where he met my mom, and they fell in love and got married, and they had my sister first, who was born with my mom's genes, completely deaf, and then I popped out with my dad's genes with all my hearing. So I'm the only one in my family who can hear. So growing up in that family, I couldn't learn how to talk from my own family. I learned how to talk by copying all the voices I heard on TV. So I was always absorbing any kind of voice that I hear. So the weirder the voice, the easier it is for me to do the voice. So
I should say right now, there's people to tune in because we weren't expecting this. We're talking to Craig Gass, and you are in. What are you performing tonight? What are you doing tonight? You're in town for what?
Yeah, there's a brand new comedy club in Beaverton, and I'm performing two shows tonight and two shows tomorrow. 8:15 and 10:15 tonight. 8:15 and 10:15 tomorrow. And it's West Side Comedy Club. West Side is the name of it. And the phone number over there is 296-0050. I am dirty, but as long as you're not easily offended, I'll guarantee you'll love the show. I'm telling you, as long as you're not easily offended, I will. I said this with Chase earlier this morning that, and I mean this, if you don't think it's one of the funniest shows you've ever seen, I'll let the entire audience assault me.
Fantastic. Well, so it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be one of the best shows you've ever seen, or I'll let you kick Craig's ass in the parking lot.
All right. Well, I got to tell you, man, you come back through town, we'll have you on and have you in the studio and do it right. So I take back all of my just suspicions that it would be a bad interview, which is not based, again, on you, but just on my experience with kind of comedians in general, though. So you're a cool guy. I mean, it's, you know, and just off the cuff like this, it was good to have you on here.
Yeah, you know what? I'd actually like to come in sometime and hear your stories about Kinison, because I've got some great stories about Sam. And I guess you had some interactions with Sam, right?
Well, it's just... checking to make sure that our skimmer's rolling, so I have this all. I saw Sam because, like all, I mean, I'm 33, so like all, you know, like white suburban kids about my age, I grew up just idolizing that guy.
Yep.
And it's less noticeable now, but, you know, I've been on the radio since I was a teenager, and it's for a long time. About half of what I did was stolen from Sam, and the other half was stolen from Paul Stanley from Kiss.
Oh, shut up. Are you serious?
It's true. You know, and anybody who's seen me, especially in any of our live shows, and I've done some stage work, and, you know, I did a one-man show for a while, and it was all just half Kennison, half Paul Stanley, and sort of that screaming evangelistic kind of a thing that they both do. And anyway, so I saw Sam at the Portland Opera House about 3 days before he died, and we were there, and we tried to get backstage like a bad movie. We tried to get backstage, tried to meet him, and we couldn't. And we hung out by the stage door for like an hour and a half. And I don't know what he was doing inside for an hour and a half. But if you know Sam, I mean, you know, whatever. So he's inside for like 90 minutes, and my friends and I are just shivering to death outside and just like jumping up and down to stay warm and waiting for him to come out. And he comes out and in the minivan, you know, walk into his minivan, and we just were like, Sam! You know, just like moronic, idiot teenage boys screaming at him. And he gives us the high five. And he says, "Freedom fighters, unite!" And then he gets in the minivan. He drives off. And then, just like that movie Detroit Rock City, me and my friends spend the rest of the night driving from hotel to hotel in Spokane, Washington, trying to figure out what hotel he's at. We finally figure it out. And it's this whole comedy of errors. Then we find out what floor he's on. Then we're trying to get into the room. And, of course, we don't have breasts, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and you're listening up to every door to hear the sound of chopping and, you know,
Totally.
Just give me another line.
And so that was it, man. And we finally found out where it was from, but we were never able to get inside. But yeah, he gave me a high five, and he said, "Freedom fighters unite." And then I was working at a radio station about 3 days later, and at that point we had the old dot matrix printer from the Associated Press wire, and it spat out a little urgent alert. And I actually say that I ripped it out, and I have it at home actually in my radio kind of scrapbook, and it says, "This report just in from," I think it was outside of Needles, and it said, "This report from Needles, you know, comedian Sam Kinison reportedly killed in car accident." And, I mean, it really was, without being all corny about it, for me, that was an absolute dividing line in my life, before and after, because, I mean, you'll never get another one of those guys. So
I've just never heard anybody put two influences together like Sam Kinison and Paul Stanley.
It's like bacon and ice cream, yeah.
You know, and Paul is in town this weekend.
I know, dude. I got my ticket. I am already there.
Here's one of the funniest stage raps I've ever heard in my life. I saw Kiss and Aerosmith together. Now you got to understand, I do an impression of Gene and Paul.
Oh, bring it on, brother. I'm the core demo for that.
All right, you know what? Ask me a question for Kiss, and I'll answer it as Paul and Gene. Go ahead.
Hey, so what was your motivation behind forming the band, Paul and Gene?
Well, you know, when we first put the band together, our whole idea was just to have a concept of having what would be really the greatest rock band of all time.
That's right. And you know what Paul is saying is absolutely true, because the great thing about being in Kiss is the Kiss Army is the only army of the people, for the people, and by the people. And when you're in a rock band and you see 20,000 beautiful, sexy women out in front of the stage, you always think the same thing to yourself. You think, how many of these bitches got in for free?
Jesus Christ. That's uncanny. And I got to tell you, we actually were supposed to interview Paul today, and then it fell through at the last minute. So there you go.
Well, you got him right here. That's another question.
Sarah, do you have a question for Paul Stanley?
No, this is all you, darling. You go for it.
Oh, Jesus. Now I don't even
know. Wait a second. I don't think that it wouldn't be fair if we didn't have a beautiful, sexy young female like yourself to ask me some questions.
I'm one of the bitches that got in for free.
Paul, what would you say?
I would like your full name and your social security number so we can bill you.
Paul, what would you say for the young people out there who are considering a career in rock and roll?
Well, you know, God really did give rock and roll to you, and it's always about holding on to your dreams and doing something really magical. You know, Kiss has always been like, you know, when we first recorded Kiss Alive, we were like a bunch of little baby piranhas. And, you know, a baby piranha will get the job done, but it'll do it with a smile.
Okay, see, here's the thing. We're talking to Craig Gass. He's going to be in town tonight. Is it craiggass.com?
No. It's ihatecomedians.com.
Okay, so that's the one you're still running. So it's ihatecomedians.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in town tonight. And what, tonight and tomorrow?
Yeah, tonight two shows, tomorrow two shows. In Beaverton, brand new comedy club West Side.
Here's the really amazing thing is that you don't just nail the voice in terms of like Paul Stanley, for example, but you, and as a lifelong Kiss fan, I know this, you nail exactly what Paul Stanley would say.
Dude, I've seen interviews. I'm a huge Kiss fan, too, and I've seen interviews. There was an amazing, they say a lot of ridiculous stuff in interviews. Paul Stanley once said, you know, a lot of people are envious of Kiss. I'm envious of Kiss. I mean, you know, and the thing is that when I see Paul, Paul wants me to do my impression of Gene, and he comes up to me and he always says, you know, what's that one thing you do with Gene when you do that thing on stage? Because I always do this thing on stage about Kiss where I say, and this is a quote in an interview where the interviewer said, you know, a lot of people think that Kiss should give it up. What do you say to those people? Gene Simmons' reaction is, this is his response, and I'm quoting, the great thing about being in Kiss is some people like steak and some people like ice cream. But you don't have steak with ice cream, and that's why Kiss is so great. Like, what the hell are you talking about? And I do that for Paul, and Paul goes, yeah, where does Gene come up with all that crazy crap? And I go, dude, you're the guy in the same interview that said, you know, being in Kiss, it's like a lot of bands don't even get invited to the big dinner, but Kiss is the kind of band that likes to stick around for the role. What? What the hell are you talking about, man?
Fantastic.
And dude, on stage, my favorite rap on stage, and everybody that works for Kiss is always giving me material about Kiss. I saw Paul Stanley on stage one night in Las Vegas playing with Aerosmith, and he goes, all right, now, people, listen. Listen up now. You know, I know this town, Las Vegas, is known for its buffets. Friends who work for Kiss when I see them in New York, and they all tell me the story about, did you hear about what happened in Kansas? In Kansas, and three different guys that work for the band told me this story.
Now, we got to make sure we keep this clean here.
Oh, this is clean. This is clean. It was just an accident on Paul's part. On stage, Paul goes, he goes, all right, now, people, listen. You know, I know this state is known for its Angus beef, and I can tell you right now that after this show, I'm going to want to sink my teeth into some meat. And the entire audience of the arena collectively went, what? And he goes, you know, like a thigh or a rump roast. And then everybody went, what? And this guy told me the story. He said that all the guitar techs in the back line were staring at each other like, what the hell is this?
Seriously, seriously.
Dude, I have got a million Kiss stories.
Well, see, and now and here's the thing. And you got to know, and everybody who works for me knows this. And then because I know you're busy today and we're busy. But I'm going to spend the rest of the weekend, if it'll make you happy, the rest of the weekend just kicking myself for not just having you in the studio today. So,
well, you know, there's always tomorrow, and I think that, you know, if you dream that someday your dreams will really come true.
Thank you,
that's
Paul.
That's right. And by the way, can I just make a plug?
Yes.
For anybody who missed any portion of this interview right here, you can go, don't go to Rick's website, go to kissonline.com. It'll cost you $20, and I'll have the entire show transcripted for you for $20 at kissonline.com. Click on the cod piece. And you can hear everything you just heard today transcribed by me and Paul.
It's final, and my final Kiss comment is this. Eventually, as I've told my friends this, that eventually what will happen is at Gene's website, Gene Simmons, there will just be a webcam. And the deal is you'll pay $29.99 a month. And the deal is it's just a camera of him as he counts your money. That's it.
I actually said that once in front of him. I said that, you know, I was busting his chops about... you know, if you go to kissonline.com, this very amazing thing, it's called the Cash Cam. And what it is you click on the Cash Cam, and it's a live web feed of me counting your money. And here's the thing. It's crazy because this works on so many levels. You're paying me to watch me, and I'm counting your money, but then you're paying me, and I'm counting the money. It works on so many levels. Go to kissonline.com. It's amazing.
I have to run, and I apologize. You've been great. Craig Gass, IHateComedians.com. Really quickly, can you do, and you get asked this all the time, can you do like a quick liner for us, an ID for me as Sam, just a Rick Emerson liner as Sam?
You know, this is Sam Kinison. Hey, didn't that guy die like 10 years ago? Yeah, I did. But this is the only thing that makes me come back from the dead is when I know that my buddy
Rick Emerson is on the air. Turn it up and stay tuned or I will kick your ass! I just saw a dead guy threaten me! Oh, oh!
God bless you, Craig.
Everybody come out to the Comedy Club West Side. I know it's kind of weird to have a dead guy give out a phone number, but it's 296-0050.
Craig Gass, ladies and gentlemen, it was, I didn't expect it, but I got to tell you, this turns out to be one of the best interviews we've done in a long, long time, man. So,
oh!
I hate comedians.
Don't believe it, Rick. I'm going to make out with you! Oh!
Thank you, sir. There you go. Thank you. All right, there you go. God damn. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now from the hills, from the ridiculous to the sublime, Lisa Goddard. Hello, Lisa.
Wow, I feel like I'm a buzzkill now.
I feel like
someone switched over to opera from some rock.
Can I just tell you?
Wrong.
We were just getting ready to do our break at like 11:20. We're in full on Don and Mike territory now because I got to tell you, we are like an hour behind on our breaks.
Exactly.
Those guys are legendary for that. But we're getting ready to go to our break at like 11:19, and the phone rings and it says on the screen, "Sam Kinison for you from hell." And I answer the phone, and it's Craig Gass, and I knew, you heard the story there, I knew he was in town, and somebody had said, "Do you want to interview him in the studio?" I'm like, comedians are terrible, and I'm always I always interview comedians poorly, and I'll pass. And apparently they convinced him that I was a big enough fan that he just, he's a Sam Kinison fan, and I know who that guy is, and he calls up, and I answer the phone, and literally he's talking to me as Kinison. And so we just had him over like half an hour, and I just, it was a total blindside, but it was great. So, no, but you are, but you know, here's the thing, is you know what you are? You are, there's the aperitif, and then there's the main course, and then, Lisa Goddard, there is the sorbet afterwards that cleanses the palates.
I will take it.
That's what you are, actually. So, hey, and by the way, we got to give it up to Dick Uliano, who sounded great the last couple of days.
I know, but I have been jealous.
Well, it's, you know.
I have felt like a jealous girlfriend.
Well, I'd like to think that we can, you know, we get back into our normal groove here. And baby, that'll all be a thing of the past, that Dick Uliano. He didn't mean nothing to me. I was thinking about you the whole time, Lisa. let's talk about our good friend, Ken Melman.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing. Do you remember about, 6 months ago, when we came on and we were talking to you and we had mentioned something that we had heard, and this is, you'll remember this, that we had mentioned that there were many scurrilous rumors floating around the Capitol about George W. Bush and Condoleezza Rice.
Yes.
And you obviously, you know, did not give weight or credence to those one way or the other, but you said that, yes, you were aware of the fact that those rumors were out there and sort of floating around.
Right.
And then we sort of moved forward. Now, here's the thing. There's a news network, and we'll call it CNN, that on Tuesday night had Bill Maher on Larry King Live.
Dude.
Bill Maher, and he is not the first to have done this, as he noted, he's like the fifth or sixth, but Bill Maher, when pressed repeatedly by Larry King, I might add, Bill Maher was talking about hypocrisy within what we are now referring to as the gay old party, about, anti-gay fervor inside a party that has many gay leaders and elected gay officials, blah, blah, blah. And Larry King kept saying, like, well, give me a name. And Bill Maher said, well, I don't really want to do that now. We'll do it. You got to tell me. Tell me a name, Bill Maher. Give me one. And finally, Bill Maher says, I do not believe it's a secret, he says, that Ken Melman is a gay man, and yet in the Republican Party. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. And that, and I saw that. I watched it with my own eyes. I saw that happen. And here's the amazing thing. By the time the West Coast feed of Larry King hit, that section was mysteriously excised, and all references to it have been removed from YouTube.
How about it?
How about that? And even more interesting is that Ken Melman then resigned last night, if I'm correct, and yet nowhere in the piece does it mention this. Now, I don't care what a person does in their private life. Consenting adults, whatever they do is up to them. Whatever people of age wish to conduct themselves as is their own business. My exception to that is if you are a hypocritical, moralizing, evangelical bigot, especially one who has some sort of influence on the legality of certain practices or pairings in this country, and yet at the same time, are in the closet about it. And so I'm not going to ask you to weigh in on whatever he does in his private life, but clearly you've got to be aware that this is a thing everybody talked about, and yet it's not being talked about anywhere in the mainstream press.
The main issue for me is, do I go gay? I mean, has it come to that point? Do I need to put my hat in the ring? Do I need to move over sides? Is it so trendy?
I suppose we could poll the audience right now.
Poll the audience, right. Well, okay, this is the thing with Ken Melman. Apparently, now there's all of this is flying around on the internet, but there is an internet report on something called WorldNet Daily, which I have to admit I don't know a lot about, that quotes the RNC official, Steve Schmidt, as having said, it, apparently in GQ, that Ken Melman is not gay. But it also says that Melman's dodged the question elsewhere. So it's not clear what the deal is with Ken Melman. But we do know he's out of a job. Out of the closet, in the closet, not in the closet at all, out of a job.
Have they even given, and this is the interesting, is whatever the truth of these rumors may be, I don't think they actually gave a reason one way or the other, which is the suspicious thing. I'm not even sure that in the piece they gave any reason as to why he left. It does seem sort of abrupt. I mean, obviously it was, you know, big body blow for the Republican Party. Maybe that's enough, but...
Really, it felt like... Whether or not there is an issue with his sexuality, whether or not that exists, I think, you know, he would be gone now because of the election. And I think most Republicans would agree with that. I think that his departure has very little, if anything, to do with Bill Maher bringing up him being gay or whether or not he is gay.
And for the record, our news director here is saying that the WorldNet Daily is a very far-right website, apparently.
Well, there we go. Thank you.
I know that speaking of this is sort of a huge kick to the figurative groin that the Republican Party received on Tuesday, I know that Nancy Pelosi is now sitting down with George W. Bush and so forth, and there's all of this sort of very brittle, almost British, sort of a very brittle surface politeness happening between the incoming Congress and George W. Bush. But my question is that going to continue? Is it going to continue to be sort of a tense, gridlocked standoff, or is this going to degenerate into some sort of open political warfare, do you suppose?
You know, I think it's going to go back and forth. I think that we're going to have moments like we have right now for the next maybe couple of weeks, maybe next, and then maybe the first few weeks of January, where you're going to see both sides trying to get some things done together, and you're going to see an earnest effort, at least for a few days. The question is, how long is that going to last? Then we're going to get into topics where there are huge chasms of disagreement, and then you're going to get back into potential warfare, because the Republicans are just as good, if not better in some ways, at parliamentary procedure and at blocking Democrats. Democrats showed they could go toe-to-toe with Republicans last year, really giving them a hard time on big issues like the Patriot Act, that they couldn't get through the Senate because Democrats were playing the game very well under Harry Reid. So Republicans, they know the deal as well, and they can pull out those tricks, and I'm sure that they will when it comes down to it. Trent Lott is ready to use his skills, I think. And then, of course, you've got the 2008 election. I think next year we could have a year where some things get done, but after that, maybe in next fall, people are going to start looking to 2008, and that's going to complicate things even more.
Well, and it does seem likely that the Bush administration is going to try to ram through as many things as possible before the Democrats take control. I mean, everybody's talking about John Bolton and so forth, but I mean, there's all of these...
They're not going to be able to get John Bolton through as U.N. ambassador. It doesn't look like that's possible right now, but they're hoping that maybe they can get the votes on this NSA compromise deal that they worked out with Arlen Specter in the Judiciary Committee. That would have the FISA court, that secret court, look at the NSA wiretaps as they exist now and say whether they think it's constitutional or not. Of course, it's not clear that means anything. Let's say they deem it unconstitutional. It's still up to the president whether he acts on that.
My final question is, and this is something we were talking to Dick Giuliano about yesterday, is this Rumsfeld kind of being, as I said, sort of tossed in front of, not thrown under the bus, but sort of the bus came to a complete stop.
Under the masses, I think they said in England. Yeah,
I mean, the bus had already halted, and he sort of tosses Rumsfeld in front of the bus, doing no good for anybody. It doesn't seem to me like... let me put it this way. If anything, I think getting rid of Rumsfeld immediately after the election is probably just going to anger the GOP base, because the reaction is going to be, well, A, you look weak, B, you stabbed your friend in the back, and C, if you really feel like this is going to gain you some ground, why didn't you do it a month ago when it might have helped the GOP?
I'm going to disappoint you on this one. I think that everyone is pretty happy about that. I think that the GOP realizes they had to do something, even if this was just symbolic, which I don't think it was. I think there will be some change in direction on Iraq. We don't know how significant, but even if this was symbolic, they had to do something very large and symbolic to show the American voters that they got it, that they realize that they've had problems and they need to finally admit it. And I think a lot of people, I think Republican activists, people who work in the party, realize that. Whether or not they personally like Rumsfeld is a different matter, but I think politically they had to do something like this.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, Lisa Goddard, you enjoy your weekend.
All right.
It's great to have you back. As always, a pleasure. And we will talk to you sometime next week, sister. So enjoy your afternoon. We will speak to you in the next few days.
All right.
All right. There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, back from her extended. What's this? Oh, it's a commercial break. I forgot what those are like. Omar going a solid hour without a break and how admirable it was. Let's hear it for us. All right. 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson Show. You stay right there.